Thank you very much, Diane, for putting this symposium together, and thanks to IMFAR for hosting this symposium. And thank you all for coming, despite the fact that it's the last session on the last day. Unlike the subsequent speakers in the symposium, I'm going to be talking primarily on mouse models, and that too focusing on one particular type of autism, namely Fragile X syndrome. Well, as you all know, Fragile X syndrome is the most common known genetic cause of autism and the most common inherited cause of intellectual disability. And it has a range of symptoms, including mild to severe learning disability, mental retardation, strong emotional symptoms manifested as anxiety and mood lability, and a whole host of other problems. I think the research in Fragile X has been greatly facilitated by the fact that it's caused by a mutation in a single gene, the FMR1 gene, which in turn impairs the production of the Fragile X mental retardation protein, or FMRP, and that perturbation then gives rise to a whole host of problems across multiple levels of neural organization. The discovery of FMR1 gene as being the primary culprit of this disorder then led to the creation of a mouse model, the FMR1 knockout mouse, which again greatly facilitated research into the basic cellular and molecular basis of Fragile X syndrome. And before I go into the details, since this is an educational symposium, I thought I'll give a quick primer on the terms that we'll be using in this symposium. So as you know, that neurons make contacts with each other at specific points on dendrites called synapses. In the central nervous system, excitatory synapses make contacts on these specialized structures which protrude out of the dendritic shaft called dendritic spines. And these individual spines essentially house excitatory synaptic transmission on neurons. And for the purpose of my talk, I'll be focusing entirely on one specific type of excitatory transmitter, namely glutamate. Now, one of the early discoveries in Fragile X syndrome was the fact that there's a severe pathology at the level of these synapses at the dendritic spine, in the form of an abundance of thinner, more immature dendritic spines, and which has been first discovered in human postmortem brain, and subsequently it was matched by the mouse model, the FMR1 knockout mouse model. This in turn focused much of the early attention on the synapse itself, and this in turn led to a sort of a breakthrough idea in the field, which was proposed by Mark Baer and colleagues, described as the mGluR theory, which simply focuses on one subtype of glutamate receptor, namely the metabotropic glutamate receptor, or mGluR5, to be specific. And it suggests that the psychiatric and neurological symptoms of Fragile X syndrome are essentially a consequence of abnormally high signaling through this mGluR5 receptor. And this, in turn, then gives rise to a whole range of psychiatric and neurological symptoms that are seen in Fragile X syndrome. So together with the FMR1 knockout mice and then the driving force being the mGluR theory, Fragile X syndrome has had the benefit of some major research breakthroughs over the last decade, which has led to a comprehensive understanding of the specific cellular and molecular defects that happen in Fragile X syndrome. And one of the common themes that have emerged from this research is that the mGluR5 receptor is crucial in mediating internalization of the other ionotropic receptor at the synapse, the AMPA receptor. And this AMPA receptor internalization, the specific subunit, GluR1, is internalized in the synapse in the form of long-term depression of synaptic strength. And this whole process is tightly regulated by FMRP in the normal brain. However, in the Fragile X brain, because of the lack of FMRP, this causes a runaway situation where there's an excessive internalization of GluR1 subunit of the AMPA receptor. And that's, again, manifested electrophysiologically as long-term depression. As you know, either electrical or chemical activation of mGluR5 leads to a weakening of synaptic strength in the hippocampus, which is manifested at long-term depression, or LTD. And in knockout mice, this hippocampal LTD is significantly enhanced. Indeed, this finding by Kim Huber and colleagues was one of the cornerstones of the mGluR theory that was proposed in the hippocampus. But much of this work, including the mGluR theory, is rooted in findings in the hippocampus and cortex, which are likely to give you a comprehensive understanding of the cognitive deficits of Fragile X, but are likely not to be so helpful in understanding the emotional symptoms of Fragile X, which are clearly involve dysfunction in the amygdala, as you will hear in subsequent talks as well. Indeed, in the broader context of autism, this slide, loaned to me by the next speaker, summarizes some of the amygdala dysfunctions that have been noted in autism, including aberrant social behavior, high social anxiety, and gaze aversion. Complementary studies that have caused lesions in the amygdala have also given rise to autism-like symptoms in primates and humans. And of course, specifically, aberrant activation of the amygdala in the context of face processing tasks is also a salient feature of autism. In animal models, however, much of the understanding of what the amygdala does has come from simple models such as Pavlovian fear conditioning, where a innocuous condition stimulus that on its own does not evoke any fear, when paired with aversive shocks, gives rise to enhanced freezing, which is a direct measure of the strength of the fear memory. And synapses, especially thalamic synapses, into the lateral nucleus of the amygdala plays a key role in this form of learning. Strengthening of these synapses, as shown by Joe Ledoux and colleagues, underlies fear conditioning. So a form of long-term potentiation which also underlies fear conditioning is actually mediated by mGluR5 receptors in the amygdala. So right off the bat, what you notice is that whereas mGluR5's mediated LTD, or synaptic weakening in the hippocampus, it does the opposite in the amygdala. It enhances synaptic strength in the form of LTP. So if you take a natural extension of the mGluR theory, one would predict that because mGluR signaling is enhanced in Fragile X, one could predict that LTP in the amygdala should be enhanced, and that may underlie the dysfunction in the amygdala. So we tested this idea. A student in the lab, Aparna Suvarathan, tested the idea by cutting slices, coronal slices of the amygdala from both wild-type and knockout mice, and did patch clamp recordings in pyramidal cells from the dorsal part of the lateral nucleus. These are excitatory pyramidal cells. And she stimulated thalamic inputs to these cells and studied, exactly tested this idea. And to our surprise, what we found is that mGluR-dependent LTP, which is shown here in wild-type mice, robust LTP in the wild-type mice, is completely impaired in the knockout slices. So there's a complete impairment of mGluR-LTP, contradicting the prediction from the mGluR theory. So not only is the manifestation of mGluR plasticity opposite in the two areas, the dysfunction of this plasticity itself is also opposite between these two areas. So another finding that has emerged from these studies, in the past studies in the hippocampus, is that I mentioned that there's an excessive internalization of GluR1 subunit of the AMPA receptor. Could a similar mechanism be in play in the amygdala as well? So to test this, we sought the help of an expert in the field, Professor Eric Klan at NYU, whose postdoc Chuck Hofer did this analysis and showed that the surface expression of GluR1 subunits is significantly reduced in the knockout mice, but not the total GluR1. So indeed, very much like the hippocampus, there's actually a reduction in the surface levels of AMPA receptors in the amygdala as well. So together then, what we have is an opposite effect on the phenotype of plasticity, but there's a common endpoint in that the surface expression of AMPA receptors is reduced in both areas. The second aspect of the mGluR theory, the crucial therapeutic aspect of the mGluR theory, is that mGluR5 blockers, such as MPEP, should block the dysfunctions that one sees in Fragile X syndrome. And this has been validated through genetic models in the hippocampus. So we went back and repeated the same LTP experiments by pre-incubating amygdala slices in a specific mGluR5 inverse agonist called MPEP and see if that has any effect on the LTP deficit. And to our dismay, what we found is that in the knockout slices, there was a severe impairment of LTP that I mentioned earlier, and this is not reversed by treating these slices with MPEP. So we then went back to see if there's the same basis that we found earlier in terms of AMPA receptor expression, and Eric's lab then again redid their analysis by looking at GluR1 surface expression in slices, amygdala slices, treated with MPEP. And remember that compared to the wild type, the knockout had less surface expression of GluR1, and that reduction is not reversed by MPEP treatment. So what we have is that mGluR5 blocking failed to reverse either of these synaptic defects in the amygdala. So we took a step back and thought we should actually evaluate the status of basal synaptic transmission in these slices before we go on to look at further detail at what happens with plasticity. So to do this, we recorded what is known as spontaneous miniature AMPA receptor-mediated synaptic currents, mini APSCs, and compared these levels between knockout and wild-type slices. What you see here are sample traces. These little vertical blips are individual synaptic events, miniature APSCs, and as you can see, these are significantly reduced in the knockout slices. So there's a significant reduction in the frequency of these synaptic events in the knockout slices and a modest decrease in the amplitude of these same events. Based on earlier work in the hippocampus, the reduction in amplitude along with the reduction in the surface AMPA receptors are both postsynaptic deficits, whereas frequency deficits are generally imply a presynaptic deficit. So we explored this in further detail that I won't have time to go into, but we did an array of assays to confirm that indeed there's a significant reduction in the presynaptic release of glutamate at these synapses in the amygdala. So, although MPEP treatment failed to rescue any of the postsynaptic deficits, could it still be that some of these presynaptic deficits could be rescued by the same duration of MPEP treatment? That was the final question we addressed. By again pre-incubating amygdala slices in MPEP and then looking at miniature EPSCs. So just to remind you what we had recorded earlier, the reduction in frequency, reduction in amplitude, the same thing can be replotted by plotting the cumulative frequency plot for the interval. Longer the interval, lesser the frequency and amplitude. So the next plot is a replotting of the same data in a cumulative frequency plot. So as you can see, the inter-event interval between events is longer, which means there's a lower frequency and hence a rightward shift in this curve in knockout cells, and a smaller amplitude of events, hence a leftward shift in the knockout cells. MPEP-treated slices, you see a complete shift back to shorter intervals in the knockout cells. So we're back to the same level of frequency, which is completely overlapping with the black curve, which is the wild type. So there's a complete rescue of the frequency deficit with a moderate effect on the amplitude. So although MPEP failed to rescue through in vitro treatment for an hour the postsynaptic deficits, that same duration, same concentration was good enough to completely rescue the presynaptic deficit in glutamate release. And overall, findings from our lab and more recently from a lab in Hopkins has shown that there are concomitant deficits not only in excitatory synapses but also in inhibitory synapses, and the similarities are quite striking. There's also a reduction in the release of GABA in the inhibitory synaptic terminals in the Fragile X mice in the amygdala. So there's a presynaptic component in both excitatory and inhibitory synapses. In addition, there's a reduction in the number of inhibitory synapses. So together, these are now believed to be contributing significantly to the dysfunction that one sees in the amygdala of Fragile X mice. So to summarize findings from our own lab, it's very clear that while the mGluR theory provides us with a very powerful and useful framework for studying and analyzing synaptic deficits in Fragile X, that framework, which is rooted entirely in the hippocampus, requires some significant modifications to make sense of what's happening in the amygdala. So one size does not fit all, and I think this theory, as useful as it has been, would require some serious rethinking to have a more comprehensive view of the deficits across brain regions. And this happens because of two reasons. First of all, mGluR's mediated opposing form of soft plasticity, LTD in the hippocampus and LTP in the amygdala. Superposed on this is a common underlying deficit, which is enhanced internalization of AMPA receptors in both areas. These two being in the same direction add up in the knockout mice to give you enhanced LTD. These two going in opposite directions actually lead to the impaired LTP that we see in the amygdala of the same mice. In addition to these postsynaptic deficits, what we have unearthed is a significant presynaptic component, which was not found in the hippocampus in earlier studies, but we see a significant reduction in presynaptic release of glutamate in the amygdala. And most interestingly, although MPEP has been known to rescue the postsynaptic deficits in the hippocampus, it failed to do so in the amygdala. However, the redeeming quality of these data is that the same duration of MPEP treatment does rescue the presynaptic deficits. So taken together then, in light of previous findings from Mark Baer's lab, they have shown that a genetic approach can indeed rescue some of these symptoms in Fragile X mice, but this was a genetic manipulation from birth. As opposed to that, what we are showing is it's indeed possible to come in with a pharmacological intervention well into adulthood and still reverse pre-existing deficits in the amygdala of Fragile X mice. This gives us hope that if we actually do prolonged treatment with mGluR blockers in vivo, it's very likely that we'll not only rescue the presynaptic deficits, but also rescue some of the postsynaptic deficits. And much of this work has been described in a recent paper we published last year with more gory details of the electrophysiology. So thank you very much for your attention, and I'd like to finish by thanking the student who did the work, Eric Klan, and our funding sources. Thank you.
Thank you, Shauna. We should have about 5 minutes for questions. Do people have questions? Please come to the microphone.
Hi, Shauna. Interesting talk. I guess one question would be if the mGluR5 is overactive, is it possible that you've saturated LTP and that the drug just doesn't have time to work, or on the LTD mechanisms aren't active in the slices when they're just being bathed in MPEP pre-treatment? Because it looked to me like you have effects on frequency for sure, but then a little shift in amplitude as
right,
well.
Right.
So there may be a statistically significant change in the postsynaptic effect?
Not enough. Not enough. But those changes are so small to start with. It's essentially cheating the statistics by having a large number of events. So the error bars are small. The LTP question is an important one. We have done multiple different induction protocols, thinking that maybe it's a 30 hertz protocol, unlike the hippocampus where you use 100 hertz for LTP. So maybe they was not getting enough juice to get the AMPA back into the synapse. So we did 100 hertz and very strong protocols to give the AMPA receptors more chance to get put back into the synapse. So none of those worked, but I still agree that if these drugs had more time to act in vivo for any duration of time, I'm sure they'll have a better chance to rescue it. The other problem is that we don't know exactly what the molecular mechanism of this LTP mediated by mGluR5 is in the amygdala. That remains unexplored. So in the backdrop of that, we are a bit stuck with it because this is an original finding from Joe Ledoux's lab, but they didn't follow up and explain why is it that the same receptor is giving you insertion of AMPA receptors in the amygdala, where it takes it away from the hippocampus. So that's the fundamental molecular puzzle that has to be solved to really get at this in a better way.
I have a quick question or comment. So we've talked about this quite a bit, Shauna, but it's so striking that you see opposing phenotypes in the hippocampus as opposed to the amygdala. And many investigators study the hippocampus, particularly in the newer mouse genetic models for autism. So is it your recommendation that people embark on investigations in the amygdala such as this, and what type of studies would be amenable to having others look?
Yeah, I think, you know, of course I would say yes to this, but there are some certain problems. I mean, the behavioral models are very robust that are based on the amygdala, but there's a disconnect in the behavioral phenotypes in Fragile X. The past literature suggests there's either no change in fear conditioning or reduced fear conditioning, which matches our impaired LTP, but doesn't solve the problem that in human patients there's an enhanced emotional symptoms, whereas in the mice there's either no change or actually reduced anxiety and fear conditioning. So there's clearly something going wrong there in terms of the assays. So that's all the more reason to make sure we understand what goes wrong in the cells and synapses before we design maybe better behavioral models to pull out the symptoms, phenotypes that we want.
Okay, thank you, Shauna.